Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Yes, Paul, you can.
Hi.
Jordana and
That's
Paul.
That's inappropriate.
Dan Cook at the helm. We were just looking at your texts because we're talking today, well, right now, we're talking about how grades affect success. The Boston Globe did an unbelievable story about it's about valedictorians and how they fared in life.
You would assume, being a valedictorian, right, that you are pretty much set up for the rest of your life.
Right.
If you show that kind of leadership, right, those
drive.
Kinds of skills, drive, mm-hmm, ambition at a young age,
success,
you would think, connecting the dots, the odds of being successful in life, whatever that means. And mm-hmm, it's not just money, right? It's
right.
Define success. How
of
do you
course.
Define success?
It turns out, now this Boston Globe tracked 93 of the 113 Boston public school valedictorians. These are public school kids, and most of them came from very modest means, whether they were socioeconomically depressed or I don't know if it was necessarily single parent, or, you know, they were kids that a lot of them got full rides and some help through college, didn't come from privileged backgrounds is what I'm saying.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
And no disrespect, they just didn't come from privilege. 40% of those valedictorians make less than $50,000 a year. And if you're looking at a monetary meaning of success, if you're looking at that, you would probably say you would expect a valedictorian to make more than that. One in four fail to get a bachelor's degree in 6 years. Nearly a quarter of them aspired to be doctors, but none of them have a medical degree. Four of the former students have been homeless. Now, these were 93 valedictorians in the Boston public school area. Again, these kids had other challenges. A lot of these kids came from homes with domestic issues. They were still valedictorians, which is fantastic, because
sure,
you don't need to be rich to be valedictorian in a public school. It's good to have family support. The study went, the story in the Boston Globe went on to say, if you have then family support, you know, kids with parents who know somebody to help you get a job, or maybe some financial support after college to live back in the basement so you don't have to get a job right away to look for a good job. They say familial support or just a village really helps along the way. But it kind of broadened the conversation here in the newsroom when we were talking about our show. How much do you think your grades in school attributed to your success now? And a lot of people would tell you, I mean, I'm looking back at the text now because we mentioned this in the 3 o'clock hour. This text says this: my mother always said there's a huge difference between an education and a hedgecation. Smart comparison.
I like that.
Yeah, right? Because, I mean, some people are book smart and they do really well in school, but, you know, there are other things that make a CEO or somebody a success.
Another person says, Jor, I'm way more interested in my kids' character developments and behaviors than grades. Grades are just a means to an end.
That's right.
So you're looking at the whole person. What kind of kids are we raising, right?
That's right. And that's what's interesting. I was not a great student. I wasn't a bad student, but, you know.
You weren't the teacher's pet.
I wasn't.
You didn't bring the apple. You didn't sit in the front row, raise your hand all the time.
Right. I wasn't a great student, but I was always very motivated, and I was very driven that I wanted to be a television news reporter. And thank goodness, or a reporter, that you don't, at that point in life, you didn't need a higher degree. So once I got into college, I was like, oh, phew, I don't have to work my butt off, because I worked really hard to get into college, into Syracuse. I wanted to go to the Newhouse School. And once I got in, I sort of slacked. And I was like, I just have to get through because I'm not going to any more school. I'm not going to graduate school. I'm not doing that. So I certainly paid attention to my television classes and my reporting classes. But the other stuff, the math and the language, and I didn't really pay attention so much. So I would say necessarily that grades wasn't all that important to me. And if you measure success as to accomplishing a goal, like being a reporter or working in your field, while I'm not wildly successful, I have had success in my chosen career. I'm not rich or famous, but I have had success in my career. But, you know, so I think it's more hard work. You know, there are other things that make you a success. If you go where the jobs are and you move out of state, if you persevere and you don't give up. And one of the textures said something interesting, that good grades teaches that. It teaches you how to compete. Mm-hmm. And I thought that that was interesting, and that's a good way to look at it. Well, if you're not in the top of who got an A on the test, then other people beat you. And it's a dog-eat-dog world when you get to the business world or whatever your path is going to be. And that does kind of teach you competition.
At the end of the day, though, I think we all have gifts. I think every single individual has a gift. And part of the challenge, and that's on the part of parents, clergy, teachers, is finding what are you good at? What do you love?
Absolutely.
What is your passion?
Yes.
And if you can get paid to do something you love to do. I got okay grades. I was a B-plus student. At the end of the day, what got me going was Agnes.
A hurricane.
Tropical storm Agnes that flooded our house.
In Pennsylvania.
Scared the holy crap out of me.
You had a passion.
Traumatized our family. We had to move out. I mean, it was a mess. And it was almost like a message. And it got me on track.
Yes.
Just studying meteorology.
You had a life-changing
event. Not in school,
event.
But I mean, going to the library and reading books about severe storms. And that just kind of pulled me in. And then I went to a state university and paid my way through college at Penn State by doing radio, weather on 11 radio stations. That paid my tuition.
And so you're not lazy either, Paul. So while maybe it wasn't straight A's.
You haven't seen me on a Saturday night.
And you weren't the valedictorian. Yeah. You were never lazy. You always worked. You always did something.
Yeah,
and that you can't teach. That doesn't matter about grades. You could have Fs and not be lazy and just have a different passion and work toward that.
But at some point, I think you just have to jump into the deep end of the pool, right? And I mentioned this at 3 o'clock hour. Internships, right? Be an apprentice.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just get your foot in the door. Once you're in, you can actually do okay. But people wait. And they can't wait. You just have to jump in.
One of the texters writes, Jordana, what do you expect from your children then? And this is an interesting question. This is why I pitched it to the boys today, because I do put an emphasis on grades, because my mother did as well. And yet it gave me pause as a parent. And maybe you have kids that are 5, 10, 15, whatever years old. This study gave me pause because it's not always about the grades. Yes, the grades get you into college and maybe they teach you to compete. But the study gave me pause about what I think about. And yes, I do expect that my children get good grades, but maybe I need to change my thinking. And that's what I loved about this story, because it shifted my perspective. Jean is in Woodbury. Jean, jump in here, love.
Hey, Jean.
Hi, how you doing? I just wanted to call. My daughter is going to be graduating this May after 3 years in college. Mm-hmm. And she was a student athlete, and she pushed herself. But something that you were just saying, Jor, was my daughter is ADHD, and she would study with the TV on, with her music on, and with something on her laptop.
Wow.
And I had to step back and say, if that's what works for her, as long as her grades weren't suffering and she was passing all of her classes, actually she did very well in high school, I had to let it go.
Good for you, Jean. What incredible mothering that is, to be able to see that and take a step back.
To be that self-aware. Yeah. No, I agree.
It actually came from a friend of mine who was a teacher who said, why does she have to have the TV off? But so it made me step back. But you know, she was able to do AP classes in high school and CIS in high school, and she pushed herself. So
fantastic.
But she's always worked. She's had a work ethic also. So it's really kind of neat what the kids will do on their own.
Amazing. Hey, Jean, where are you from originally?
I'm the Jersey girl.
I can hear it. I heard it right there. She said my daughter. I'm like, oh, that's my girl.
Daughter.
There's my girl. Jean,
yes.
Great job.
No.
Thank you for calling.
Thanks
in.
For calling,
and mazel tov to your daughter for graduating.
Thank you.
You got it. She's right about that. It's that's what this study did. It kind of made me step back and say, okay, maybe I need to change up my expectations about grades, because mine weren't great. What am I don't want to make my kids crazy.
I also wonder if some of it is, you know, like you hear the complaints about teaching to the test.
Yes.
That if you stress grades so much that that you lose sight of why you're learning this stuff, instead you just focus on what, you know, the specific facts and figures that you're learning.
That's right.
And so much of that doesn't necessarily serve you other than as random trivia parties going forward as an adult. But so much, you know,
if you get on Jeopardy or something.
Right, exactly. It's not the specifics of it that are so important as the processes you learn to problem solve throughout school. That's the important stuff.
Yeah.
But if you're so, you know, zoned in on grades and making sure you get that grade point average and, you know, being the top percentile of your class, then maybe you lose a little bit of the forest for the trees.
I would argue the preoccupation with memorization still to this day, and okay, now we have iPads, when in fact, picking up what you just said, Dan, it's connecting the dots.
Right.
And knowing that you're not going to have a gig for 40 years. In fact, if you're a young person, if you're a millennial, you'll probably have two or three different careers and two dozen different jobs. So we've talked about this before, just constantly retraining, relearning. You're never done learning new skills. And you can learn those skills now online at home. So, yeah, you might still want to get that four-year degree, but even if you have a four-year degree, you're not done. You're just getting started, and you're going to have to keep learning new things for jobs that don't even exist
yet
today.
Your texts are fascinating. Hey, guys, I didn't pass high school, ended up getting my GED, later went on to college. I'm now on a six-figure career path. Good for you. Again, wow. If your measure is money, you are killing it. You're crushing it. Good for you.
I had C's in high school, no college. I make about $100,000 a year.
See, it's not this exactly. I mean, it proves that good grades aren't a measure of success. Perhaps valedictorians, guys, are more interested in intellectual, spiritual, or philosophical pursuits than making money or being in a corporate world or in charge of things. And that's it. It depends on your measure of success. You know, we as a society, we measure success with money, and we shouldn't. We measure
shouldn't
success.
It be balance? Shouldn't it be balance?
And satisfaction, and if you're doing what you love, and that if getting good grades got you there, then it worked. Dave's in Hudson. Jump in here, Dave.
Hey, can you hear me?
We can,
hey,
sir.
David.
Hey, well, I was just going to say that people that are good in school are good workers. They're not good entrepreneurs. School rewards people for following the rules and doing what they're supposed to do. Entrepreneurs that typically make a lot more money challenge the system. They challenge the status quo.
They tend to be rebels.
That's a good point, Dave. Yeah. Thank you.
It's
thank
a
you
great
for the
point.
Call.
Yeah. I think Steve Jobs would probably agree with that. Mark Zuckerberg and Bill Gates, who both dropped out of Harvard. Now, granted, they were smart enough to get into Harvard.
Yeah.
But they were bored. They were bored at Harvard. And they just, why am I sitting through class? I want to go out. I don't want to read about doing it. I want to go out and do it my way.
Mm-hmm. Average student in high school, dropped out middle of my senior year. Fortunate to have a mentor, taught me everything. I make over 150 plus in my own business.
Wow.
And this one, barely graduated high school. I'm a VP of a small business. Common sense and hard work. You guys are killing it. Thanks for sharing.
When we come back, an update on the shutdown. Day 32 of the federal government shutdown. There are some glimmers of hope that maybe, just maybe, there might be some bipartisan agreement to at least temporarily reopen the government. We'll have the very latest when we come back on CCO.
New Hall of Fame inductees announced today. And Dan Cook tells us there has never been a unanimous inductee.
Until today.
There
in the history of baseball, nobody had ever been unanimously elected, received every eligible vote. The Baseball Writers Association of America are the ones that vote on the Hall of Fame. And up until today, no player, not Babe Ruth, not any of them, not Ty Cobb. Nobody had ever received 100% of the eligible votes. And Mariano Rivera of the Yankees did.
Mm-hmm.
He became, which is interesting on a lot of levels. A, just because it's the first time it's ever happened.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a no-brainer Hall of Famer. Don't get me wrong. He absolutely deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. There's no two ways about that. But the problem, or the weird part about it is, relief pitchers aren't heavily represented in the Hall of Fame. There's only a handful of them in there. Because it's been regarded over the years that starting pitchers are the great pitchers. Those are the Hall of Famers. You know,
sure.
That you end up being a relief pitcher because you couldn't hack it as a starter, so you're sort of thought of as less than. But he was so dominant closing for the Yankees. He was so good, especially in the postseason, is where he really made a name for himself, that he becomes the first ever player of any kind to be unanimously elected into the Hall of Fame.
Good for him.
That's very cool.
So he's going to be one of four players going into the Hall, one of four players elected by the Baseball Writers Association going into the Hall this summer, along with Roy Halladay, who's unfortunately dearly departed. He was killed in a plane crash a few years back.
Sad.
Edgar Martinez, the famous designated hitter for the Seattle Mariners, is going in. And Mike Mussina, another pitcher that played for the had spent some time with the Yankees. I think the bulk of his career was in Baltimore. He will be elected to the Hall of Fame.
That's great.
So Roger Clemens and Barry Bonds and some of those steroid guys, still not in.
Are you disappointed? Did you think anybody was going to get in?
I'm not disappointed with any of those names. I'm surprised. I mean, I'm surprised. I thought, I mean, Mo was for sure going to get in. I'm a little surprised that he ends up being the first player to ever be unanimously elected. But I like that because this nonsense of, well, Babe Ruth didn't get in unanimously, so somebody would feel like they couldn't vote for that guy because nobody's supposed to get in unanimously, that's now gone. I'm a big fan of that notion. A little surprised that Edgar got in only because designated hitter is kind of that same thing where it's, if you can't play defense, are you really a Hall of Famer? Well, yeah, some of those guys are, and Edgar's getting in, so I'm happy to see that as well.
Speaking,
Thanks,
yeah, thank you, Dan.
You're welcome.
Speaking of New York, we are News Talk, and when there's news, we bring it to you as soon as we vet it, as soon as we get it.
You got a little breaking news in your hand right there?
All flights bound for Newark, one of the main airports, of course, serving New York City, were halted after two drones were spotted nearby. So some of the same issues that they had recently in London now coming to the United States. You watch. They're really going to have to crack down on drones. Something has to be done.
But they could be anywhere. They're not necessarily traceable. Even if they get the drone, they don't know who the owner is. I mean, they could. Well, is a major security threat.
There are defensive measures that you can put in place. The military has defensive measures.
For drones?
So you can protect a given airspace from drones.
What, like Iron Dome?
It is expensive. It's like a little mini Iron Dome. But, yes, you can protect any airspace, and the military is doing it for military.
So are they
airports.
Shooting them down then? Is the military shooting down the drones?
They have technologies that
I can't really talk about it.
It's very, very secret.
It's super secret. Speaking of which, your son works for the Pentagon. He works in the Pentagon. Okay, but he is not furloughed.
No. The Navy still has their budget. It's a separate pot of money, but yeah, he's not impacted by this.
My goodness. Well, I guess they closed Newark Airport, I guess not because of the TSA calling out sick or the absence rate, obviously, was the drones.
10% of the TSA employees just not showing up.
This is crazy. 10%. Can you imagine that reduction in workforce? Look, I fly in and out of Newark a few times a year. It's a disaster. It's pretty much a junk show all the time.
It can't
be
as bad as JFK.
No, it can. It's, you're right. It's
JFK,
not as bad as
you've got people boarding the plane with goats and chickens, and it's just, it's
3.1% a year ago was the absence rate for TSA workers. Now it is 10%. These workers are taking extreme measures. They're getting second jobs. They're selling some kind of, they're selling personal items. They're having garage sales. They're starting GoFundMe pages. John Bon Jovi is helping feed them in southern New Jersey, which is a wonderful thing. And there's little movement, except there are two bills that are going to be proposed on Thursday that may have a compromise built in there. We're not exactly sure what the bills say. We'll bring you that as soon as we know.
Yeah, but at least Mitch McConnell and Senator Chuck Schumer are talking about a possible way out, a path out of this partial shutdown in its fifth week. The two announced earlier this afternoon that there may be a way to at least temporarily reopen the federal government and then start negotiating about border security. So we shall see.
Got to take a quick break for news. When we get back, the surveillance economy. You're part of it whether you like it or not. We'll talk after the break.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
I'm okay with being free.
You should be very, very expensive.
Talking about Priceless. Data mining, of course. I am okay with not having to pay for Facebook or Twitter or Instagram, and I know they're following me. I know they're tracking me. But I need to know how many straightening irons are out there that they can market toward me so I can make a good choice.
I think and that's fine. And you have the freedom to accept that contract. But there needs to be full disclosure.
That's true.
Aren't you a little bit curious because the product is free? And I love Google.
Meaning us. We're the product.
We
folks.
Are the product. Mm-hmm. But don't you want to know what they're doing with your data?
What do you think they're doing? Been? They're selling it to Target because Target wants to know what kind of diapers I like best or see if they can get me to buy the Target brand of tissues. You know, that's probably, I don't think it's anything nefarious.
Did you give Google or Facebook consent?
I'm sure
to track you and to sell your data. And that's and that's the problem, right? If there's full transparency, if people know and can make a conscious decision, yes, I give you authority to use my breadcrumbs, all my private data. Yes, you may resell that to hundreds of companies.
Does it say that in the fine print?
Somewhere. But just by downloading the app, you give consent to do that.
But then that's on me, isn't it?
No, it's
I should have to read the fine print.
It's on the damn attorneys.
They should make the print bigger?
They should make it easier, and yes, and it should be very black and white. Right now it's buried in fine print. But this is where the Europeans just fined Google $59 million, which granted they can find in the seat cushions, but about not disclosing to consumers in Europe what they can do to keep their private data private. There's certain stuff I don't care if Google has or Facebook has. There's other stuff that I don't necessarily want shared with every Tom, Dick, and Harry or sold to every Tom, Dick, and Harry. What I would love is if Google said, hey, we're not going to track you and sell your data, but you're going to have to pay $30, $50, $70 a year to use our service, Google Maps, the incredible search engine.
You're one of the few people that would do that. A lot of people would not pay for it.
Others would do it if it meant you're not selling my data. I want to keep a lot of stuff private. I have the ability to be forgotten, to be private.
We're talking about surveillance capitalism. We are living in a new age of surveillance capitalism, and Paul is very angry about it.
Well, no, I'm just I'm irritated.
He is irritated that Facebook is watching you. Instagram is watching you. Google is watching you. Alexa is watching you. She's always listening, by the way. She is. And reordering paper towels, maybe, because she knows that you go through them really quickly and you're not very judicious about them.
What's interesting is that Paul's so passionate about this, he actually called Facebook and somehow got through to Mark Zuckerberg.
Yeah.
And we actually have Mark's reaction when Paul said, don't sell my data. Mark said,
no, senor! No, senor! No, senor! No, senor! No, senor!
I don't know why he went into Spanish there.
He was worked up. He was really, really worked up.
That is Mark Zuckerberg, yeah.
He was worked up.
So that's a no. He's still going to do it, and he doesn't really care what you think. And I think you need to release this, honey, because as Dan Cook says, the toothpaste is out of that tube. And you know how hard it is to get toothpaste back in the tube? It's near impossible.
George Orwell would be so proud of you.
Look,
he wrote 1984. Talk about being, what's the right word?
Prescient.
Having a premonition. Prescient, yeah. He nailed it. He nailed it a long time ago.
Yeah, and we knew it was coming. And if Facebook's free, either read the fine print or get over it because they got us. If we, but look, Paul, we can go back to 2006. We can go back to and by the way, Facebook, the iPhone, and Twitter were all invented in 2007 or launched in 2007. So we can go back to 2006. You can do that because complaining about it now is just, it's wasted energy because it's done. You're still on Facebook.
I don't post on Facebook.
Ever?
No.
Did you fill out your profile?
I think, 7 years ago or whenever the heck it started.
They know your age.
Yeah.
They know your skin color. They probably don't know your income, but they probably know what you do. They know that you're married, your relationship status.
If the product is free,
it's you,
you
honey.
Are the product.
It's
and if
you.
You're okay with that, right. Great. But I think there are a lot of Americans who are not okay with that, who think that some things should be private, and my data, I should have the freedom to keep my data private.
Well, doesn't that mean then you have to get off social media and off Google?
It's not just social media. It's, I mean, We're all part of the matrix now. We're all plugged in. Look at all the data breaches from Marriott hotels. I mean, every other week, there's another major company that's been breached.
So, that's because we give them our data, because we fill out profiles online.
But we don't
because
hold
we have
them,
the ease of making reservations
We don't hold them accountable.
Online.
We don't hold these big companies accountable when there are breaches of our data. And Social Security numbers wind up on the dark web and people's identities are hacked. Who pays for that? So I'm just saying, this is the tip of the iceberg. You wait. It's going to get worse. And at some point, we have to take back our data.
Chris is in Minneapolis. Jump in here, Chris.
Yeah. Hey, Paul. Good commentary. I wanted to let you, Nora, just chime in case you don't already. There is legislation right now in Europe regarding these very privacy issues. And the premise of it is, can a consumer reasonably know the level of content that's in a disclaimer? And they're settling lawsuits and privacy issues with an emphatic no. You can't reasonably expect a consumer to know that information. But when it comes to data privacy for the private sector, it's pretty simple because it all equates to dollars and marketing and revenue, market share, et cetera. So the motive is easy to figure out. But the other challenge is when it comes to government, U.S. government surveillance, what is their motivation? Thank you.
Sure, no.
And that's interesting.
And that's a slippery
slope. Chris, good point.
Right. Suddenly they know that, okay, yeah, we were tracking your phone because we can do that, and we see that you did exceed the speed limit by 8 miles an hour on this stretch of 394, so we're going to go ahead and mail out a ticket for you automatically.
Well, you shouldn't speed, Paul. And you were going way more than 8 miles over the speed limit.
Thank you, Mrs. Orwell. Well, yes, I was.
No, what Chris brings up a really excellent
point.
It's
a slippery slope.
Because I don't care that they're marketing flat irons to me or what diapers I need. I don't need diapers anymore, but you know what I mean. I might need adult diapers soon. I'm getting there.
Please don't go there.
But when he talks about the government, and then you get into, not that we have government-run healthcare, but if you get into what you're searching online, then if your health insurance company starts knowing the things that you're searching, starts knowing that you're getting migraines or that you're in menopause or, God forbid, you have a diagnosis like cancer or something like that, then I think that's where it becomes a slippery slope.
Then we become where China is going, where everybody has a social score and they monitor all your posts, and if you have a high score, you're in good shape. You can get a loan.
Mm-hmm.
You can go to college. If you have a low score, if you're not, quote, trustworthy, then suddenly maybe you can't get that loan. Maybe you can't rent that apartment. You can't get the insurance at the rate that you hope to get the insurance. I'm just saying it's a very slippery slope.
Do speeders in China, are they not allowed to rent apartments?
No, but if you post something against the Chinese, against the government,
different story.
Big black mark, and yeah, now mm-hmm. suddenly you can't get a loan. So,
well, I wouldn't go all dark like that. We're not China, and I don't think we're going there, as far as I know. We're still a democracy, or a republic. I think
we're okay.
We're okay
yes.
for now. But then it becomes, are you willing to live with that? And as I heard myself saying, it becomes a slippery slope. I went all Paul on you for a while there with the healthcare stuff. I do think that's dangerous, and I would like that data protected. But am I willing to get off Facebook? Am I willing to get off Instagram? I am not. And if a healthcare company is going to hold that against me, then that is a risk that I run. And unfortunately, I'm going to have to pay the price. But I also believe that we can't stand up here and complain about it. There is fine print. And if you're worried about it, read the fine print.
Shoshana Zuboff wrote a new book. It's called The Age of Surveillance Capitalism. Not just capitalism, surveillance capitalism. Free services that billions of people cheerfully use, enabling the providers of those services to monitor the behavior of users in astonishing detail, often without their explicit consent. I think it's all about consent. It's
correct.
One thing if mm-hmm. you know what they're doing with your data and you're fine with it. Okay, great. Bless it.
Right.
Check this box. I'm fine. The problem is we don't know where our data is going, who it's being sold to. It's the wild, wild west of personal data.
You have to assume it's going everywhere. That's what you have to assume.
But we didn't give consent for it to go everywhere.
But you did. You just didn't read the fine print.
Oh, so really? Because I didn't read page 412, paragraph 3? You can do whatever you want with my data? BS.
The world we live in, my friend.
That is BS.
And we're out of time. Apparently, DuckDuckGo is a no-tracking, no-targeted ad search engine. This person is texting in.
You can search for ducks? Or it'll shoot my
It's
duck.
547. That is a Wicks and Jewelers time check. Explore an exceptional collection of luxury jewelry, Swiss watches at Wicks and Jewelers, just off 35W in Bloomington.
Pretty much the same way you were saying
mine.
Come on. I mean, pretty much.
I don't sing. Again, he doesn't dance. I know. And we both did it. Yeah. It's brutal. I feel bad for Dan. Honestly, I feel bad.
You're the one that wants cameras in the studio. So.
White guys can't dance.
Yet.
It's true.
I sang two words of that song, Name That Tune, and Dan got it, and so did the texter. The song's Aretha Franklin. Aretha Franklin sang in the Blues Brothers.
Hmm.
That's right. By the way, this person says, I have to agree with Paul on this. They always do agree with you.
No, they don't.
Yeah, they do.
No, they don't.
I would pay a fee to use Amazon and Google if the data was private. The issue is, in this day and age, you have access to the internet, but you don't have a choice to keep your information private. To become a hermit is not reasonable, and that's true. Hashtag truth. One texter, before we get to the Oscars, this text was fascinating. Hey, guys, don't forget when you send in your DNA to find out what your real nationality is. Who can access that?
Yeah.
Can you imagine that data bank?
If 23andMe gets hacked.
Yes.
Or what's the other one? The Ancestry.
Ancestry.com.
Ancestry.com.
This person said, I just realized when I responded to the keyword for cash, someone might be using that to track my radio habits. They are.
We are not targeting
you.
Nope.
Yes. Oscar noms. Who do you want to see win?
I like Bohemian Rhapsody. And I also liked Star is Born. Those were my two favorites of all the ones that I watched.
Okay, go ahead. Complain.
Bohemian Rhapsody was a great final 20 minutes. And Rami Malek was fantastic throughout. He was a great actor. Same way that Christian Bale was great in Vice, but Vice was just kind of an okay movie.
Rami Malek was genius.
Yeah, Christian Bale was great, and genius. Rami Malek is great.
I think Rami should get Best Actor.
And the first two-thirds of that movie, of Bohemian Rhapsody, have been done 1,000 times. Any band movie, biopic, you know, you could have plugged in a formula, and that's essentially what it was. You know, they get famous really fast, it goes to their heads, somebody gets crazy and leaves the band, and then they get back together. Like I said, the final 20 minutes when they finally get back together and then go do the Live Aid performance, brilliant. And I loved it. And it saved that film. Absolutely no chance that should win Best Picture.
I was fixated not on the acting, with the exception of Ronnie. I was the music. I thought they did a very good job portraying Freddie Mercury and the arc of his tortured career.
Yeah.
I mean, the guy was brilliant. Nobody will take that away from him, but... He was tortured. I didn't know he was engaged.
Dan's favorite part of that movie was the Mike Myers.
Oh, it was not my favorite part of that movie. It was ridiculous. I mean, come on. Seriously?
Opera on rock radio? Nope, what?
Nobody will ever bounce their heads in a car to this. You know, you might as well have just looked at the camera and winked.
Yeah.
I mean, it was obvious.
Was good.
Come on.
That was pretty good.
I loved it, but we're out of time. Tomorrow, the fourth industrial revolution. We're living through it. You might not even know it. See you tomorrow.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.